Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. How are we doing this week, Dustin?
Can I use the word chaos? There's a lot of chaos that we have to address this week. So I'm doing great because that was a fun weekend we just came off of. Jim, how are you?
I'm very good. I love chaos too. So it was a fantastic week. And you know what's nice about this week, Dustin? You and I are going to be focused. Yes. On football. A week ago, for those of you who didn't hear us last week, first of all, why not? Where were you? You got to listen to the Keystone Kickoff Show when we have Dustin on. Last week, we recorded on Monday afternoon, and during our recording, my Mets were playing his Braves, and I've never been on one of these video interviews where someone was more distracted. Dustin was constantly looking away because on his monitor was the baseball game.
Yep, I was trying to multitask. It's hard enough for me to chew gum and walk at the same time, so it's a miracle that I was able to get through our segment coherently. So I'll take that as a victory, but no distractions this week, all football.
What I thought was fun, and that game went back and forth, I did not have to look away to see the score. I didn't have to have Dustin tell me anything. All I had to do was look at his expression, and I knew which way the game was going, didn't I?
Yep, that's all it took. You could tell it was such a roller coaster game, too, that you could just tell the emotions were all over the place. It was a fun game, though, even though the Braves lost that one that we were recording during. It was fun.
Well, it was an incredible day, a doubleheader the day after the season, each team needing one win. For those who are baseball fans, Mets and Braves, doubleheader, they each needed one win to get into the playoffs. And if they each got one win, the Arizona Diamondbacks would be eliminated. And you just kind of knew going into the game, whoever won the first game, they may as well just forfeit the second game. Yeah, it was going to be a split, right?
Exactly.
All right. Well, how about we talk some football, Dustin? And before we get too much into just the Big Ten, nationally, you said chaos. And I was away this weekend. I was at a wedding, so I was on the road for several. Yeah. Long story.
Yeah, sure.
The worst part was the drive. Oh, I complained so much for the last couple of weeks, Dustin. Our listeners have heard me doing this for 2 weeks. And the fact is, it was a wonderful wedding, a wonderful time. It was great. And when I got there, I found there were a lot of Penn State fans. There were a lot of New York Met fans. So we're at the bar. We're watching the TV. So a lot of fun in a lot of ways. But driving out, I'm listening to the satellite radio college sports station, and they're talking about what a weak schedule it is this weekend. And some go, well, you know, sometimes those are the ones you have the most fun with. Dustin, we had a lot of fun with the chaos this weekend, didn't we?
We certainly did. I think it was somewhere like I did the math earlier today, and now it's leaving my brain because it's we're recording on a Monday, and that's what happens. But I think it was like 7 or 8 ranked teams lost to lower ranked or unranked teams over the week. And obviously the most shocking being Alabama losing to Vanderbilt. That was one of those games, Jim, that you just watched and you kept like reading Twitter and watching the game and be like, okay, where's when Alabama scores that touchdown? Like, how are they going to escape? Because you knew they were going to escape. And that play just never came. And so I think even though Vanderbilt could take like the victory formation, I think everybody was waiting to see Alabama make a play until the clock struck zero. That was unbelievable. And to see the goalpost marching down downtown Broadway, downtown Nashville on Broadway, the bachelorette parties had to be very confused and bewildered by what they were witnessing that day.
They had to. I'll tell you, sticking with the wedding stories, earlier in the day, before the games really got going, I was talking to someone there, college football, and he mentioned his niece goes to Vanderbilt. She's a senior there. You know, it's disappointing because the football's not very good, but at least they have baseball. Well, much later, had no idea what happened in the game. Someone texted me that score. I went over to him, to the gentleman whose niece was attending Vanderbilt, and I said, by the way, that lousy football team at Vanderbilt beat the number one team in the game. They beat Alabama. He holds up his phone and shows me a picture that his niece had just sent him. She was there and was among the students had stormed the field.
Nice.
So she was on the field. And that's really what makes college football the best sport, Dustin. And I'll remind people, because I said it last week, if you haven't seen this quarterback from Vanderbilt, he's something special.
Yeah, he's a really talented player. I don't even know how you pronounce this. Is how bad it is, Jim. The Pavia, I think is how you pronounce it, or Pavia. I don't know. This is I'm showing my ignorance here outside of the Big Ten. But I mean, he threw it all over Alabama's defense, and of course, now Jim, there's panic in Tuscaloosa. Kalen DeBoer, after one loss, may not be the right guy. Could you imagine that? What it's just crazy. I think we saw in that Georgia game, as it relates to Alabama, that their defense, even though they held them to a minimum in that first half, their defense wasn't very good in the second half. I don't think Alabama's defense is very good. I think their offense is very explosive, but I think Kalen DeBoer is getting a wake up call in a conference that actually plays defense, and if that's not a wake-up call losing to Vanderbilt, then I don't know what's going to be.
Nick Saban would have never lost that game.
Correct.
The other statistic that I think is fantastic is, until this Saturday, Vanderbilt 60 times has played a top-five team. The record in those games, 0-60.
Yeah. That is, could you imagine, not only do you get your first top five win, it's against college football's best program ever, and they're ranked number one in the country. I just can't, the only thing that, Vanderbilt doesn't care, but the only thing that would sour it to me would be the fact that it's not Nick Saban. You'd love it to be Nick Saban, but it's still Alabama. And clearly those kids on their way to the Cumberland River did not care that Nick Saban wasn't coaching that team.
It didn't matter. It did not matter. It doesn't matter to me, Dustin. Alabama went down the number one team to Vanderbilt. It's crazy. And by this, I mentioned this on an earlier show. The Southeast Conference is probably going to say, oh, this just shows how deep the Southeast Conference is. No, it doesn't. It shows that your best teams aren't that good. My take from the Texas A&M shellacking of Missouri is something we knew. Missouri's a fraud.
Yeah, they are fraudulent. I kind of wondered. They looked good. I remember texting somebody, I think it was my brother, earlier this season, and I think it was after they beat Buffalo. Like, the first two games they pitched shutouts. Now, that's Murray State and Buffalo. But nonetheless, to have back-to-back shutouts is impressive. And I'm thinking, is Missouri for real? Are they the truth? They are not. They're false. They're false, Jim. They just didn't play very good teams. They almost got beat by... So, I think Vanderbilt might be a little bit better than we thought, because they took Missouri to two overtimes. Missouri, yes. Not nearly as good as maybe they were ranked.
I think that is without a doubt the case. Missouri is not a good team. And, I'll admit this one. I've been saying... all leading up to the season, there's somebody in the Southeast Conference who's in that second tier who would move up. I didn't know if it was going to be LSU, Ole Miss, Missouri, Tennessee. Well, after 4 weeks, I thought it was Tennessee. Nope. Tennessee, me, Arkansas.
Yeah. That was – I don't – It's hard to rate these in terms of like total surprise, but Arkansas was another one that you just, you see the program and the way they've played. They got, they played well, but they got basically torched against Oklahoma State. I think there were some people that thought after that loss to Oklahoma State and then that other loss to Texas A&M that Sam Pittman might be on the hot seat. He might have saved his job with that win because they've got enough games. They still got a tough schedule, but I think they've got enough games to get to bowl eligibility. Yeah, I don't know. Tennessee is – the thing that's wild to me is a team like Tennessee, when you rely so heavily on your offense, if that team is just not clicking, you don't really have a backup plan. And I think that that's what's bitten Tennessee under Josh Heupel in previous seasons. I think it was 2022, the year they beat Alabama at home, ended like a 19-game losing streak or whatever it was, and then a couple weeks later lost to South Carolina. I just, when their offense isn't clicking, they're in deep trouble, and 12 straight games is a long time to get your offense clicking. So I think Tennessee's still good, but if they are not firing on all cylinders offensively, anybody can beat them.
And again, I thought they would, I thought they deserved that top five ranking. Mm-hmm. I thought they were going to, you know, knocking on the door of where Texas and Georgia and Alabama are, which is kind of crazy me to say that right after Alabama loses to Vanderbilt. There was a couple, Big Ten ranked teams that went down. We'll get to them next segment when we talk about the Big Ten. The one game that it wasn't an upset but came very close, Miami just keeps escaping Dustin with wins. They were down 35-18 to Cal going into the fourth quarter. They pulled out the win 39-38. And again, the officials were part of this. There was a huge call that got reviewed, targeting, and the call went in Miami's favor.
Yeah, somebody sent out a tweet, and I think it might have been accurate, and I know we're running out of time here for this segment, but basically it was the ACC saw what happened to Alabama, Tennessee, and decided that it wasn't targeting, because that last play against Miami should have been targeting and should have ended the game. And that's the second time Miami's been bailed out by the officiating. So I don't, I think Miami's a good football team, but I think they've also been aided. Is it two? It's either two straight weeks or two of the last 3 weeks they've been aided by the officiating.
It's two straight weeks. You think it further back because it was Friday night when they got bailed out against Virginia Tech. All right, that's it for quarter one in the national picture. Quarter two, we'll look at the Big Ten.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte, Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Big Ten football, quarter number one. We did the whole national picture. Let's hit the Big Ten. And you know what? We were talking in the first segment, Dustin, about some of those ranked teams who went down. And you know what? The Big Ten was not spared. Teams ranked number 10 and 11 in the country, they went down. Let's start with Michigan and Washington. I know you and I, we talked about this game going into the weekend last week. Michigan, I thought they were just the better team, that they would go out there and win. You reminded me that Washington's defense was pretty good.
Yeah, their defense is pretty good. It's even better, Jim, when they play a team that can't throw a forward pass. It's crazy to me. Yeah, I think what's, I think, got to be frustrating if you're a Michigan person is the fact that you see sparks. Like, this run game is good. The defense is good. But the fact that you can't pass, you don't have a quarterback, your receivers aren't great, and you pass blocking is a problem, that's got to be frustrating, because I think they have the other pieces that are there to maybe not win the Big Ten, but be up in near like a 10-win team and maybe be in that category. But this one, I give Jed Fish a lot of credit. I think when we first started, you know, doing the show at the beginning of the season, I said I don't expect much from Washington, because basically what Jed Fish said at Media Days, which is now 3 months ago, was, you know, we're going to play our hearts out, and what the scoreboard says is what it says at the end of the season. Well, Washington's 4-2, and they're a goal line stand away from being 5-1, and they're a couple missed field goals away from being 6-2. And I know that if ifs and buts were candies and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas, right? But the bottom line is, I think this is a really sneaky good Washington team. And I don't mean like Big Ten challenger sneaky good. I mean like can just probably compete with just about anybody outside of Ohio State, Oregon, and maybe Penn State. I think their defense is that good.
Well, a couple things. I'm hoping that somebody will show some respect for Washington in their power rankings. We will find out. We will find out in next segment if that's the case. And if they're sneaky good, just a reminder, Dustin, they are coming to Penn State for the whiteout. You, my friend, have an open invitation to our tailgate if you come in for that game. Just a reminder, Dustin.
Just throwing the eye emojis out there.
Oh, another top-ranked team. USC was ranked 11th. I think we've all been real curious about them. They went down to Minnesota. I felt good for Minnesota because they really got ripped off against Michigan the previous week with some Wolverine officials in that game. Minnesota came back in the fourth quarter with 14 unanswered points, and they beat USC 24-17, Dustin.
Yeah, a more balanced attack. Now, the numbers don't look great from an offensive standpoint. I think they had just over, you know, they had 350 yards somewhere in that category. But Max Brosmer, 15 and 19, 169 yards. That's really good for a Minnesota quarterback. Darius Taylor, their running back, nearly 150 rush yards in that game. I think Minnesota this season has been good defensively to compete with everybody they've played. They almost beat North Carolina. They had a sluggish second half against Iowa, but it's basically because their offense couldn't move the ball. This time they were able to ball control. They were able to move the football well enough, and then they were able to sneak it in on the goal line. Could you imagine though, Jim, had they not gotten that, and you're PJ Fleck and you don't settle for the 3 points that could have won you the game? I mean, gutsy play call there, but it paid off for Minnesota. And then I want to get your thoughts on this game, too. And then I have just kind of a general comment that I'm going to make about the new West Coast schools in the Big Ten.
Well, I'm curious about this USC team. And I was going to ask you, is USC tough enough to play in the Big Ten? Or was this Minnesota expose them?
Yeah, I think Michigan exposed them. I think Michigan's inability to throw the football, but the fact that they were able to continue to ground and pound with Kalel Mullings, I think that exposed them, like just continue to wear them down. And Minnesota ran the ball 40 times for 193 yards, 4.8 yards per carry. That's not like earth shattering, but that's going to get you a first down every three plays if you run that with that level of consistency. So I think the blueprint to beat USC is out. And I think that it kind of surprises me that Wisconsin went away from that. I think they were the one team that maybe didn't follow that strategy as well. And they didn't have they obviously didn't have the horses. But if you want to beat USC, just run the football until they prove they can stop it. Even if it's just 3 to 5 yards per carry, get first downs and wear down that defense.
Are you telling me you think maybe, just maybe, Catron Allen and Nick Singleton might have good games this Saturday?
I think that. Do I want to say it could get ugly, Jim? I don't want to say it could get ugly because I will give them a little home field advantage. But it has potential to be a typical Penn State. And I mean this in the best way possible. A typical Penn State. This looks ugly. 10-7 score at half, And then by the end of the game, it's 28-17, and you never really have doubt that Penn State was going to win the game.
That has been their formula. And even, you know, against UCLA, now UCLA put up a touchdown on like the last play of the game to make the score look respectable. Penn State only scored 27 points, but that game was never in doubt, Dustin.
Yeah.
And yeah, I could see something similar going on against USC.
Here's the interesting thing that I want to point out before we move on from this is, outside of Indiana going to UCLA and kind of dominating, these travel issues have, I don't know if it's a distance thing. I don't know if it's travel schedule. I don't know if it's a hiccup in the practice formula, but like teams that are making the cross country trips right now are not performing well. Washington got beat at Rutgers. We just saw UCLA go to Penn State and not play. And I know some of it's matchups, but like USC going to Michigan and losing, going to Michigan and losing, Michigan going out to Washington and losing. It kind of makes you wonder a little bit, doesn't it? Like what's interesting this week is you have two of the, well, I think the two top teams in the conference, Ohio State and Penn State, going out west. Ohio State to play Oregon, Penn State to play USC. So this is going to be like, and then Washington's going to Iowa. So this is going to be a real interesting weekend in terms of like, is there a, for lack of a better term, jet lag factor?
It is. It's going to be really fascinating to see. And we're going to talk more about this coming week's games in our fourth quarter, Dustin, but you're right. And UCLA traveling to Penn State, they had everything against them. They're traveling that far. They're playing at noon on the East Coast, which means it's 9 a.m. according to their body clock. That's tough to do, but no matter where you played, you expected Penn State to win the game.
Right.
But you're going to have a couple what should be competitive games with Ohio State and Oregon, Penn State and USC. So you're right. It's going to be really fascinating seeing the two top teams in the conference going to the West Coast. And Penn State in handling, they're going out a day earlier. They're going out on Thursday, I think, to try to process things for them. And I think the fact that it's a 3:30 game is also helpful for Penn State. I think making it a night game or noon game, I think that fits well for them making the travel from the East Coast.
And in my opinion, I know it's going to be hard because TV runs everything, but these games should be played 3:30, between 3:30 and like 6:30 Eastern time every week. I don't think it's fair, which this happens later in the season, for Rutgers to go to USC on a Friday night and play an 11 o'clock Eastern time game.
Like, when, yes.
And then to your point, UCLA is going to fly out and then they're playing a 9 a.m. kickoff, and UCLA wasn't going to win that game no matter what. But in terms of fairness, like, why? I mean, I know the answer. TV runs everything, so they don't care about the student athletes, coaches, anybody else, whatever. But it just that's the part of this that frustrates me. I'm like, if you're playing those West Coast schools should be in that 3:30 to 7 p.m. kickoff slot every week, so there's no body clock advantage one way or another.
And you know what we have coming up, you know, a week where Ohio State's playing Penn State and Fox big noon game, they rule the roost. It's Penn State Ohio State. They want that game so badly. This is Penn State UCLA. Okay.
I
can't imagine. And I have the results right in front of me. I could probably find games. They could have, you'd think they would adjust that a little bit. You know what? Hey, not right. I'd like to see the Big Ten, the conference, step in with some of that television stuff and say, hey, wait a minute. Let's swap these games here. This doesn't make sense.
There's no reason they couldn't have had Iowa, Ohio State in that noon slot.
Yes. In fact, well, you know, one could argue that would have been the better game for a noon slot.
Yeah, correct. Penn State never really like put their foot on the throat of UCLA, but for a half. That was an entertaining game for Iowa and Ohio State. It was 7-0 at the half. So
exactly. And those are, you know, two named teams in the conference. Obviously, Ohio State. This was the closest thing to a test that Ohio State has had on the season. You know, Iowa with, you know, their defense. And that game probably, I didn't see it, but it sounds like it went just like we would script it. Yes. Iowa's defense would be good enough to keep them competitive for a half. At halftime, I'm sure the locker room is the Iowa defense asking the Iowa offense if they're even going to show up. And then you have Ohio State roll in the second half.
Yep, that's exactly how it went, too. Now, the third quarter was an offensive explosion for Ohio State because the Hawkeye defense was just worn down because they weren't getting any assistance offensively.
All right, Dustin, we managed to steal some of our headlines from the fourth quarter and because we couldn't help ourselves, okay? We just couldn't help it. So that's all right. We are going to hit a couple more of these games. We were supposed to finish it in this segment. It's okay that we didn't. But what that allows us to do, Dustin, you know what it allows us to do?
Go through power rankings.
Well, when we come back, we could talk about your Indiana Hoosiers. How about that?
Oh, boy. Oh, that sounds good.
All right. We will do that. We'll hit Indiana when we come back right at the start of the next segment. So stick with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Big Ten football. It doesn't get better than that, Dustin, does it?
No, it certainly does not. Love it.
And the highlight of the show, we get to talk about your Indiana Hoosiers. Now, full disclosure here, before the season started, Dustin writes about all of the Big Ten, but he has kind of a warm spot in his heart for both Indiana and Purdue. And you told me before the season started, look out, those two teams might be better than we think they are. You were half right, my friend.
I was half right, but I was even more incorrect than I was right about first Purdue has got that is the worst, maybe the worst Power Five team I have ever watched. We won't spend any more time there.
Well,
go ahead.
I will point out though that last week they changed offensive coordinators. Okay. And it obviously made a difference because Purdue put up 6 points this week.
They were really lighting up the scoreboard, making sure all of those lights worked on that Camp Randall end zone scoreboard. That was pretty pitiful. I don't know that Ryan Walters is going to make it to a third season.
Well, they did hold Wisconsin to 52.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's the worst. This is the second time this season, it may be third if you count Oregon State, that Purdue has lost its worst has had its worst loss to an opponent in program history. Wisconsin by 46, Notre Dame by 59. Not too many coaches survive that, Jim.
Ooh, setting a record every time they get on the field. All right, I give you a hard time about Purdue, but it appears you were right about Indiana, at least their offense. It's like clockwork. They're going to put up 40 points, Dustin.
Yeah, in every game since their first since their opener against FIU, they've scored 40 points or more. So this is a really good offensive team. Curtis Rourke has that unit rolling. Even in the first half, they only put up 17 points, but they were able to get things going in the second half against what I thought is a solid, decent Northwestern defense, you know, they can give you some trouble, but their offense is usually pretty bad. The one thing, though, Jim, is this Indiana team really hasn't played a team with a defense. Now, I don't want to take anything away from IU, because at a place like Indiana, just to get to six wins, to start 6-0 and get bowl eligibility before we're even to Halloween, that's a really big deal in Bloomington. That does not happen. Like, I don't know that it's ever happened in program history. I'd have to go through my notes. But now they'll have a bye week. In the second half of the season, they play a Nebraska team that's got a really good defense. Washington, we've talked about, has a good defense. Michigan, good defense. Ohio State, good defense. Purdue, they might score 100 points on them. So they have a really tough four-game slate of their final six. We're going to find out a lot about the Hoosiers in the second half of the season, but I think I would have said if they were 4-2 or 5-1 at this point in the season, it would have been a huge win. So to be 6-0 in the bye, and you're hosting Big Noon Kickoff in a few weeks against Nebraska, man, it's been a great job by Kurt Cignetti, and I think he's probably the front runner to win Big Ten Coach of the Year.
Makes me wonder where they are in your power rankings. We'll get there shortly. One last game I wanted to ask you about. Talking about Indiana's offense, a game where we didn't see much of it. Nebraska 14, Rutgers 7. That was a really big game for those two teams, wasn't it, Dustin?
Yeah, it was. And I think that was big because now you're one step closer to bowl eligibility if you're Nebraska. And again, their schedule gets a little bit tougher. I think Rutgers is pretty much kind of the same. Like, they don't have any peaks and valleys this season. I think Rutgers could afford to lose that game. Great game. It was what seemed like 50-mile-an-hour winds. You know, it was 100 degrees on October, whatever the day was, 5th, probably hotter than it was on July or August 5th there. Yeah, that was a really good defensive game. Special teams were important. I think Nebraska's defense is really good, but the problem with them right now is they seem to play one half. In five of their six games, they've only played one half of football, and then the second half, they just kind of coast. And that's going to be a problem when you have to play teams like Indiana, Iowa, USC later this season. So Ohio State. So I'm curious. This right now, I think Nebraska is a really good 30-minute team, and I think their defense is good for 60 minutes. So about a 45-minute team. They need to do something offensively in the second half of these games if they're going to get to eight. I think they'll probably get to 8 wins, but if they want to get to 9, maybe challenge for 10.
All right, let's shift gears to your power rankings. Everybody's waiting for this every week, Dustin. At the top, again, Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, right?
Yep, there's been no change. The only caveat I think I'd throw out there is I think Oregon, I feel better about them at number 3. And not that I think that there's a better team than them, but it was almost like Ohio State and Penn State were in their own tier for a little bit there in that top tier. And then that third might have been, or that second tier might have been Oregon and Indiana. I think Oregon has figured out their offensive line issues. Now, what we'll find out this week is if Dylan Gabriel can throw the ball down the field instead of just side to side. But I feel, it sounds weird, I've had them 3 for most of the season, but I think I feel better about them at number 3 than I did before.
Well, we're going to find out a lot, as you said, against Ohio State. Ohio State is so good that I think you shouldn't have moral victories at that level, but I think Oregon being competitive with Ohio State will say a lot about Oregon in that. Penn State, we'll see about them against USC. Where things start to get interesting, Dustin, it is Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, then number 4, your Indiana Hoosiers.
Yeah, I have to put them up there right now because they're 6-0. They're ranked high in the AP. Their offense is outstanding. Their defense has some question marks, obviously. They've given up a lot of points this season. So we'll find out more about this team in the second half of the season. But it's really hard to keep them out of that number 4 spot, especially since Illinois is coming off a loss to Penn State and then had a bye week. That's why I put Indiana above Illinois this week. That would be too bad those two teams don't play each other. That could be a really fun game.
That would be. And then you have next Illinois and Nebraska. So it was Indiana, Illinois, Nebraska, all moving up two slots. And those have been three good teams this season. It'd be interesting how to pick and choose among those three.
Yeah, yeah. They're all neck and neck. I think they're all about the same skill level. I think Nebraska's defense heavy. I think Indiana's offense heavy. And I think Illinois is probably the most balanced of those three teams.
Then it's interesting. Next up is Michigan, seventh. They drop three slots. You have Michigan, Rutgers, and USC. USC dropping four slots. It's just fascinating for me, Dustin, to say this out loud, that at that juncture, number 7, 8, and 9, Michigan and USC and Rutgers right between the two.
Isn't it fun? I actually think I moved Rutgers up a spot or two this week. So
yes, you have them up two slots after their loss.
Yeah, Michigan is, they could be lower in a few weeks. I just don't have any faith in them, but their two losses were a road loss to Washington and a home loss to a really good Texas team. So, and then USC, that's another team that I think you could argue would be lower. This is the point of I'm trying to make is I'm trying to be as flexible as possible so people don't yell at me. because you could change around a lot of these, and I don't think I would argue with you, but I still think Michigan's a really good running team and a defensive team. It's just their passing attack is so bad.
Yes. And I think what's let me ask you this question, just talking about Michigan. If you had to set an early line for Michigan-Ohio State, what would the line be?
21.5 in favor of Ohio State.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. if Ohio State gets them down, they will just keep piling it on. Yeah. They won't ease up. All right, the next couple teams, Iowa down a spot after their big loss to Ohio State. Washington only up one slot. You sing the praises of Washington. Where is that? 3, 6, 9, 10. You have Washington number 11. You moved them up one slot, huh?
Yeah, people were yelling at me for not having them above Michigan, but they beat Michigan. They lost to Rutgers. I just need to see a little bit more from this team. I don't know. I almost wish there were tiers. I could do this in tiers instead of actual power rankings, because I think like 7 through probably 12 is probably all in that same tier. But yeah, Washington, they have the two losses. They could easily be 6-0. Maybe they could be higher. Iowa, really hard to judge too, because their two losses have been to two really good football teams in Iowa State and Ohio State. So, and I think they're better offensively right now. But this is the fun thing, Jim. We will see Iowa and Washington this week, and we'll see which team deserves maybe to be higher next week.
You know what? You have Iowa just ahead of Washington. If Washington beats Iowa, you'll reward Washington by leaving them right where they are, won't you?
Dropping them down four spots, probably.
And then maybe the biggest disappointment in the Big Ten, 13th, you have Wisconsin. Just not a good team.
No, and that's a team that is coming off a 52-6 win. This is interesting to me, Jim. We're 5 weeks in. Usually by now, or 6 weeks, excuse me. Wisconsin is 5 games in. Usually by now, you have a pretty good understanding of what every team is, who they are not. Wisconsin might be the biggest mystery, because their two losses are to USC on the road and to Alabama. They haven't had their starting quarterback in either of those two games. Their three wins are against Western Michigan, Purdue, and South Dakota. They haven't played like a Minnesota, an Iowa, they haven't played a middle of the road team. So I'm waiting to see. Wisconsin is a team that maybe could fall a little bit, could rise a little bit. It's just hard to place them. I think they're a mediocre football team, but I'm trying to evaluate their level of mediocre. Is it on the up and up, or is it on the low? It's very interesting. It's just like they've played two, and I know we found out some things about USC with them losing to Minnesota, but I think the fact that Wisconsin had to go to USC is a factor in that. So 5 games in, I still don't know that we know that much about Wisconsin.
Well, you know, when you have the out-of-conference schedules that some of these teams have, you really learn nothing about them. All right, mm-hmm. Dustin, that's it for quarter number three. Quarter four, we look ahead. Stay tuned for that.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim, he's Dustin. We are talking Big Ten football. We reviewed what they did last weekend. We reviewed Dustin's power rankings. Now it's time to look forward. And you know what, Dustin? This is probably a week before the season even started. If you're a Big Ten fan, you had to circle this date because what may have been, at least when the season started, what you considered the four best teams in the conference, you have Ohio State playing Oregon out there. You have Penn State at USC. Now, USC, a little bit of a disappointment, but both Ohio State and Penn State going out on the road to the West Coast. Let's start with that Ohio State at Oregon game. Now, Oregon is a home underdog to Ohio State. Whatever I last saw, Oregon is getting 4 points in that game, Dustin. Still a heck of a matchup and probably the first legitimate test for Ohio State and maybe for both these teams.
Yeah, I think Oregon had a legitimate test in Boise State. Looks like Boise State's a pretty good football team. I think like I said, Oregon had some trouble in those first two games against Boise State and against Idaho, and I think Idaho was the big shocker there. But it looks like their offensive line is starting to gel together, mesh a little bit better. And Dylan Gabriel and Tez Johnson, that combination of quarterback wide receiver, is electric, but it's basically been sideline to sideline. It's get the ball to Tez Johnson and see what he can do, you know, make some plays. What Ohio State is going to force them to do, because I think Ohio State has better athletes, they're going to have to stretch the field. And I don't know that we've seen that consistently from Oregon enough, especially against a better defense. And that's where my biggest concern is, because I don't know that Oregon's going to be able to run the football unless they're able to do that against Ohio State. And then Ohio State, on the other hand, they have not played a team with an offense, with a good offense. So we're going to find out. This defense has held all but one opponent to 7 points or less, I believe. And that was against Marshall. Yeah, they 7-7, 14-0-6. But they played Akron, Western Michigan, Marshall, Michigan State, and Iowa. So I think this is a test of an Oregon team that really hasn't played a good defense yet and an Ohio State defense that really hasn't played a really very good offense yet. So that's a lot of mystery in this game, but I think because we're from the Big Ten, we tend to give the advantage to Ohio State because we just know how talented they are and how many elite athletes they have on their roster.
Yes, Ohio State, ask Urban Meyer, maybe the most talented roster in the last decade or so, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it would be hard for me to bet against Ohio State in that game. I know some of the numbers we are seeing for teams traveling multiple time zones, but it just appears to be I'll take Ohio State in that game. Who do you have, Dustin?
I'm going to take Ohio State, too. I think they're just more dynamic offensively.
I agree. Then the other big one, of course, as Penn State fans most interested in, is Penn State at USC. After the Ohio State game, this is the game that Penn State had circled, we're most concerned with. And it's funny how we change our perspective almost week to week about USC. They get the big opening win against LSU.
Yep.
And we said, oh my goodness, they have a defense now. USC, you know, they're going to be one of the best teams in the country. Now, kind of change your opinion of them. After a couple of losses, they're not even ranked anymore. And Penn State out there on the road, Penn State's a 5.5-point favorite there, Dustin.
Yeah, and I like that line. I think the travel thing is going to be interesting to me just because it's been such a storyline throughout the early portion of this Big Ten season. But I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. So far in these bigger matchups, USC has not proven that they can stop the run. And this is where James Franklin should be licking his chops. And you should give the ball to Catron Allen and Nick Singleton like 25 times each and just dare them to stop it. I'm going to mispronounce his name. Vega.
Ioane.
Okay. Send him in motion a few times. Get him in the slot. Let him flatten some guy. God, that was awesome. But I think it does come down to, Penn State's rushing attack, because I don't think if Penn State can move the ball offensively, I don't think their defense is going to have much difficulty with USC's offense. Like, I think you look at Lincoln Riley and you look at USC and you think this is a great offensive team. Their highest output was 48 points against Utah State. They scored 27 against LSU, 24 against Michigan, only 38 against Wisconsin, 17 against Minnesota. And Penn State is the best defense that they will face, probably. So as long as Penn State can run the football and establish itself on the ground, I think that's going to give, I think this is going to be one of those traditional Penn State games where you're feeling nervous at halftime, but then in the second half, you're going to kick it in gear and they're going to start to pull away.
And I hope Penn State doesn't go through that slow phase to start the game. And I don't know if you saw James Franklin's quotes this week about Nick Singleton. He made it seem like Singleton was close to playing against UCLA, that they felt he was close. You almost got the feeling they were holding him out. You know, we didn't really need him. He was in uniform at the side on the sideline. They didn't really need him. Gave him the extra week. Of course, James Franklin is always coy about injury, so he won't tell us what it was. But you get the feeling that he will be ready to play against USC. And the other thing is, what's surprising is Andy Kotelnicki comes in as this offensive guru. When typically when you hear that, you think passing game.
Yeah.
But Penn State has been running the ball a whole lot more. I think Drew Aller threw 24 passes this past weekend against UCLA. I have to look it up, but I think that might be the most he's thrown in any game.
Well, that's probably true because he's only thrown 103 passes on the season. So divide by five, that's 20 per game. And that's where Penn State wants to live, because I think Drew Aller's a very good quarterback. I also don't think he's like a Justin Fields, CJ Stroud type quarterback. So if you're able to move the ball on the ground and set him up for success, where you're going to catch the defense off guard and you kind of pick your spots and where he's going to throw, that's how Penn State is going to get to the college football playoff. That's how they're going to get to Indianapolis. And so you're right. I did not thought of that, but that's a very good point. Typically you think offensive genius, you think air raid, but that's not necessarily been the case with Kotelnicki.
No, he goes with what works. And I'll tell you one more thing. I would love to see a game, not this game where, you know, USC is vulnerable to the rushing attack. I want to see the defense that's vulnerable to throwing the ball, where Penn State just says, hey, we're going to let Drew Aller air it out. And I bring that up in the context of in the UCLA game, and this has happened in another game, right before half, they get 1 minute, 2 minute left to go in the half, and they say, hey, we got to go 80 yards. We're going to need to throw the ball. And it allowed Drew Aller, they just put the ball in his hands and said, march us down the field, and he was tremendous, just tremendous. I think he was 5 for 6 with multiple gains of over 20 yards. So he has that capability. Again, I'd like to just see a game where they let him air it out, 40, 50 passes, just to see what would happen. Of the rest of the games, Dustin, probably the only one that's intriguing to me is this Washington at Iowa game. Iowa is a 3-point favorite, which essentially says, hey, it's the home field advantage. But good defense from Washington, good defense from Iowa. Are we looking at 6-3 in this game?
No, I was going to say 9-6. So, I mean, I think it's going to be a low scoring game. Both these defenses play really well. Both of the offenses have struggled at times. I do think I would actually lean towards Washington in this one. Caleb Johnson is a really good running back for Iowa, but I think Washington has the better quarterback in Will Rogers. And I don't think. Why did I say think? I know Washington has the better quarterback in Will Rogers. So I'm going to give them the advantage in this game. This may come back to bite me, but I think Washington's going to actually win this game on the road. And then we'll see them move up in Dustin's power rankings. I think this Wisconsin-Rutgers game is actually sneaky good. I'd like to see how Rutgers responds to losing their first game, getting back home. And then I'm going to see what Wisconsin looks like after a get-right game against Purdue where they won by 46 points. Like, does that give them the confidence necessary to go in and get some wins? And how frustrated and upset is Rutgers? Do they come out, and play with their hair on fire?
You're right. I did miss that one. That is an interesting matchup. And again, Rutgers is the 2.5-point favorite there, which is essentially that, the home field advantage. I think I like Rutgers in that game.
I think I do too. I think that they're going to be able to run the football a little bit better against Wisconsin than they were against Nebraska last week. And I just, again, I think Wisconsin, being down their starting running back in Ches Malusi, being down Tyler Van Dyke. I know Braden Locke has played a couple games for them, started a couple games, but I think Rutgers has better pieces. And the fact that it's a home game, I think I like Rutgers in this one too.
And I also think after losing a game, I don't think that burst Rutgers' bubble. We saw there were several of these games where I think we all said, can't count on them to win all of them. They're winnable, but they're not going to win all of them. They're going to stumble somewhere. This one now becomes even more important to them, though, after having that loss last week to Nebraska. This one becomes that much more important to them. Will they get where they want to be? Can they get to 9 or 10 wins? To get there, you have to beat Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think you're looking at 9 wins, and you're right. I think you do have to win this game, and then you've got UCLA, USC, but Minnesota, Maryland, Illinois, Rutgers. If you can, I see USC and Illinois. I don't think those are unwinnable games, but those are probably the most challenging. So yes, 9 wins, very attainable for this team if you beat Wisconsin this weekend.
Very realistic. All right, Dustin, great show today. A lot of fun, a lot of great games this week. As much as I enjoyed this week, I got a feeling next week's going to be just as much fun with those, especially those two games on the West Coast, going to give us lots to talk about. So thank you, Dustin. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesdays, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.